This lecture, Kipling by John Webb, is the 13th of 20 lectures supplied to members of Kwatyu Koronati Correspondence Circle on audio cassette in 1989. Worshipful Brother Don Ray, the preceptor of the Linford Lodge of Research, was given permission for the transcription and including on the Linford website in July 2021. Copyright of the audio material is retained by Kwatyu Koronati Correspondence Circle.
In the Transactions of the Crater Koronati Lodge, published in 1964, volume AQC number 77, there appears a long article written by Brother Harry Carr entitled Kipling and the Craft. This paper was written to mark the centenary of the birth of Rudyard Kipling, which occurred on the 30th of December 1865 in Bombay, India. It is now over 50 years since his death occurred, while staying at Brown's Hotel in London, where on the 13th of January 1936, he suffered a severe hemorrhage from which he died on the 18th of January. He had just completed his 70 years. 2 days later, his great friend and admirer, King George V, also died. To mark the period of 50 years, various publishing firms are making available new editions of the many books and poems which Kipling wrote. It is the object of this tape to stimulate an interest amongst Masons in the writings of Rudyard Kipling, and also to suggest that photocopies of the article by Brother Harry Carr can be obtained from QCCC Limited, 60 Great Queen Street, London, WC2B5BA. Let us then review a little of the life of Rudyard Kipling, 1865-1936, poet and short story writer. He was born in Bombay, India, where his father, who was of Yorkshire stock, taught in a new school of art. The name Rudyard was given to him, and is the name of a lake in Staffordshire where his mother and father first met. Two of his mother's sisters married distinguished artists, both of whom were elected to be members of the Royal Academy, and they were also knighted. One was Sir Edward Poynter, and the other Sir Edward Burne-Jones. The third sister married Alfred Baldwin and became the mother of Stanley Baldwin, a future British Prime Minister. 3 years after the birth of Rudyard, his mother gave birth to a daughter named Trixie. In 1871, the family returned to England on leave, and before returning to India, the parents arranged for the children to be placed in the care of a Mrs. Holloway in Southsea. The young Rudyard spent 6 miserable years in the home of this evangelical Christian tyrant, the periods of harsh discipline only being relieved by visits from his beloved Auntie Georgie Burne-Jones and William Morris, whom he knew as Uncle Topsy. In 1878, Rudyard was removed to the United Services College, Westward Ho, where he came under the influence of Headmaster Cormel Price, who was a good friend of the Burne-Jones and William Morris. He was encouraged to read and to write, and the foundations were laid down for his future career as a newspaper journalist and author. At Westward Ho, he formed an alliance with two other boys, George Beresford and Lionel Dunstable, which he immortalized in the schoolboy stories known as Stalky & Co., published in 1899. In 1882, he returned to India to work as a journalist, first with the Civil and Military Gazette in Lahore. At this time, his father was principal of the School of Art and curator of the Lahore Museum. Rudyard was just 17 years of age, and of this period of his life, he wrote later in Something of Myself, "I made my own experiments in the weights, colors, perfumes, and attributes of words in relation to other words, either as read aloud so that they may hold the ear, or, scattered over the page, draw the eye. There is no line of my verse or prose which has not been mouthed till the tongue has made all smooth, and memory, after many recitals, has mechanically slipped the grosser superfluities." As a journalist, he was forced to travel into every corner of Indian life. Lahore was a significant station in army life, and it was but a short journey to Simla, where in the summer the government of the Punjab established a headquarters. His articles for the paper were to be published widely, and his fame as a writer was to encourage the paper to promote him to a more senior position in Allahabad. At this time, Kipling placed his emphasis on duty and the job which had to be done, rather than on his own personal feelings. He had a sense of personal discipline, which allowed him to mix with persons of all types and castes, while his own personal observations enabled him to store material away for recall at a future date. With his father's precepts before him, Kipling formed the opinion that a man's integrity depended upon his loyalty to his task. It was in Lahore that Rudyard Kipling first evinced an interest in Freemasonry. He was just over 20 years of age, with the family group re-established by the return to India of his sister Trix. He was described as being abrupt, untidy, and also as witty and an excellent conversationalist. He had a boundless energy and a full zest for living. He had suffered the slings and arrows of sickness with malaria and dysentery, as most of the other residents in Lahore had, and, as was the custom, he had travelled to Simla to recover away from the overpowering heat. It was at Simla that he had been introduced to the Viceroy, Lord Dufferin, thereby widening his social contacts and the knowledge of the mechanism of government. Kipling was initiated into the Lodge of Hope and Perseverance, No. 782, English Constitution, on Monday the 5th of April 1886, at the regular meeting which took place in the Masonic Hall, Anakali, Lahore, India. He was just 20 years and 2.5 months at the time of his application, which was proposed by Worshipful Brother Colonel Menezes and seconded by Brother C. Brown. A dispensation from the district Grand Master was obtained for his initiation, as he was below the age of 21 years, and he was described as being the assistant editor of the Civil and Military Gazette. In his autobiography, Something of Myself, which he completed shortly before his death, he wrote, "In 85 I was made a Freemason by dispensation, Lodge of Hope and Perseverance, 782 English Constitution, being under age, because the Lodge hoped for a good secretary. They did not get him, but I helped, and got father to advise in decorating the bare walls of the Masonic Hall with hangings after the prescription of Solomon's Temple. Here I met Muslims, Hindus, Sikhs, members of the Araya and Brahmo Samaj, and a Jew tiler who was priest and butcher to his little community in the city. So yet another world opened to me, which I needed. On the 3rd of May he was passed to the degree of a fellow craft, and after the summer recess he was raised to the third degree on the 6th of December of the same year. By this time he was acting as secretary to the lodge, and the minutes of his own raising had been faithfully recorded in his handwriting. One can remark here that the date of his initiation, as recorded in the lodge minutes, is accurate. We can forgive the small error in his usual accuracy when recalling the event after 50 years, for he gave the date as 1885. He was duly elected secretary in January 1887, and thereafter attended the lodge regularly until August 1887. During the short period from January to April 1887, he prepared and delivered a paper entitled The Origin of the Craft First Degree, and a second paper entitled Popular Views on Freemasonry. Unfortunately, no trace exists of these two papers, or of the substance of the lectures which no doubt he researched from the libraries in the garrison town, as well as the museum and files available to him as a working journalist. There is no doubt that Kipling loved Freemasonry and all that it meant to him. This is excellently pointed out by the author Philip Mason in his biography of Kipling entitled Kipling, The Glass, The Shadow and The Fire. Of this he writes, "Kipling did not believe that the gods, a term he used ironically and often varied by Allah, could be moved. still less compelled by magic, but he did profoundly believe in ritual, the performance as a discipline of certain acts which are sociably acceptable and which have a symbolic significance. Masonic ritual appealed to him, keeping things clean and bright, the craftsman's care of his tools, what he called soul-cleansing routine. And the value of ritual or routine at a time of loss is a point to which he often returns. He continued to learn as much as he could about Masonry in general, and on the 14th of April 1887, he was advanced in the Mark degree in Fidelity Mark Lodge No. 98 at Lahore. And on the same day, he was elevated in Mount Ararat Arch Mariners No. 98. It would be as well if we recall the very deep impression made on Kipling by the brethren of his mother lodge. But as he has stated in Something of Myself, the lodge exemplified to him that persons of all faiths, colours, and races could meet together in harmony and brotherly love. It was not until 1896, with the publication of The Seven Seas, that he expressed all that he felt about the meetings at the Masonic Hall in Lahore. The poem, entitled The Mother Lodge, must rank as one of the greatest of Masonic offerings, written in the manner of a Cockney trooper who had joined the lodge. There was Rundle, station master, and Beasley of the rail, and Ackerman commissariat, and Donkin of the jail, and Blake, conductor sergeant, our master twice, was he, with him that kept the Furup shop, old Framji Edelgee. Outside, sergeant, sir, salute, salam, inside, brother, and it done do no harm. We met upon the level, and we parted on the square, and I was junior deacon in my mother lodge out there. We'd Bowler, Nath accountant, and Saul the Aiden Jew, and Dinmar mid draftsman at the survey office too. There was Babu Chakrabarti, and Amar Singh the Sikh, and Castro from the fitting sheds, the Roman Catholic. We hadn't good regalia, and our lodge was old and bare. For we knew the ancient landmarks, and we kept them to an air. And looking on it backwards, it often strikes me thus, there ain't such things as infidels, except perhaps it's us. For monthly after labour, we'd all sit down and smoke. We durstn't give no banquets, lest the brothers' class were broke. And man on man got talking, religion and the rest, and every man comparing of the God he knew the best. So man on man got talking, and not a brother stirred till morning waked the parrots and that damn brain-fevered bird. We'd say 'twas highly curious, and we'd all ride home to bed, with Mohammed, God, and Shiva, changing pickets in our head. Full oft on government service, this roving foot hath pressed, and bore fraternal greetings to the lodges east and west, according as commanded, from Kuwait to Singapore. Ah, but I wish that I could see 'em in my mother lodge once more. I wish that I could see 'em, my brethren black and brown, with the trichy smelling pleasant and the Ogdan passing down, and the old Kansama snoring on the bottle Kana floor, like a master in good standing with my mother lodge once more. Outside, sergeant, sir, salute, salam, and inside, brother, and it doesn't do no harm. We met upon the level, and we parted on the square, an Irish junior deacon in my mother lodge out there. Meanwhile, Kipling was now enjoying success and was promoted to work on the staff of the Pioneer, a more important paper published in Allahabad. He was given greater freedom to travel and to develop his writing. He had anticipated that this promotion would be of a temporary nature, but he did not judge the success which would be his as a result of the publication of Plain Tales from the Hills, 1888. He therefore had to write to the lodge in Lahore, asking for a clearance certificate to enable him to join the Lodge of Independence with Philanthropy in Allahabad. At the same time he asked that his Grand Lodge certificate might be sent to the master of the new lodge when it arrived from England. At this time, he did not resign from his mother lodge, but asked to be placed on the list of absent brethren, paid his dues to date, and sent warm fraternal greetings to the brethren. He joined the Lodge of Independence with Philanthropy, No. 391 in Allahabad, on the 17th of April, 1888. However, his membership was of short duration, for on the 9th of March, 1889, he took passage from Calcutta en route to England via the United States of America. He officially wrote a letter of resignation from the Lodge at Allahabad on the 31st of December, 1889, and slightly earlier, when he realized that he would not return to India, he severed his connection with his mother lodge in Lahore. He arrived in Liverpool in October after crossing the United States from San Francisco to New England. En route, he had met with and interviewed Mark Twain. From Liverpool, he travelled to London and established himself in rooms in Villiers Street, which is off the Strand. He was to enjoy a meteoric rise in both reputation and income, for, with the help of a family friends, he developed many important connections, whilst former colleagues from the Pioneer in Allahabad, now established in England, assisted Kipling by printing some of his poems and short stories. He was elected a member of the Savile Club, which at that time was the stamping ground of most of the distinguished literary figures and publishers. In March 1890, there appeared in the Times newspaper published in London an excellent review of his writings. In America, his published works were eagerly sought after, and Plain Tales from the Hills and Departmental Ditties sold in great numbers. Rudyard Kipling was a new star which had arisen on the literary scene. He was, however, ill, and suffered recurrences of malaria and dysentery. On medical advice, he decided to take a short trip to America, from which he returned immediately, for unfortunately his fame had gone before him, and they would not allow him to rest and recover. He therefore decided to visit friends in the Isle of Wight, making the journey in July 1891. His most important friendship at this period was with a young American journalist named Walcott Ballister, with whom he cooperated in the production of a book on the subject of India and America entitled The Nalaka. It was through Ballister at Kipling's to meet his future wife. Once more, his health was to cause him worry, and he embarked on a trip to Italy, South Africa, Australia, Tasmania, and Colombo. It was an important and epic trip, for in South Africa he met with Cecil Rhodes, and a friendship was formed which remained very firm until the death of Rhodes some time later. The inscription on Rhodes' tomb are words written by Kipling in memory of a great man. His trip was to have ended in a reunion for Christmas with his parents in Lahore. Fate intervened. Walcott Ballister died suddenly in Germany of typhoid fever, and this news, when received by Kipling, caused him to abandon his plans and immediately hurry home. He arrived 14 days later, and immediately made plans to marry Caroline Ballister by special license. The marriage took place at All Souls Church, Langham Place, and after a short delay, they left to take their honeymoon in Japan and Canada before settling down in Vermont, New England, for 4 years. The Vermont years were not happy ones for Kipling or for Carrie, for apart from the birth of 2 daughters, the first, Josephine, born in December 1892, and Elsie, born in February 1896, there was considerable trouble with relatives, which caused them to decide to return to England in September 1896. They rented a house near Torquay, and when their third child, a son John, was born in August 1897, Kipling marked the year in the following words: "In all ways, the richest to us two personally." The Vermont years, however, were not wasted, for there were published Barrack Room Ballads in 1892, many inventions in 1893, and then the 2 Jungle Books in 1894 and 1895. Let us now catch up with one more Masonic fact, which took place on the 4th of October in 1889. It occurred whilst Kipling was recovering in Scotland after a period of illness. He was elected an honorary member of Lodge Canongate Kilwinning No. 2 Scottish Constitution, Edinburgh. He was further honoured by this same lodge in 1905, when, in accordance with their tradition, they elected Rudyard Kipling to be Poet Laureate of the Lodge. However, there is no record of his having attended a meeting. After wintering in South Africa, 1897-98, and being well received by Rhodes, the family decided to spend the next winter in America, where they had to dispose of property in Vermont and travel onward to New York. Here, Kipling became seriously ill, and his eldest daughter died of pneumonia. They returned to Rottingdean, and went from thence to Scotland, where the eminent philanthropist Andrew Carnegie placed a small house at their disposal. Following a period of recovery, Kipling, with his family, returned to Rottingdean. Shortly afterwards, the Boer War broke out in 1899, and following a winter spent at the Cape, Kipling resumed his profession of being a news correspondent. In this position, he met most of the men of importance in this field of conflict, including Lord Kitchener, Baden-Powell, Cecil Rhodes, Jameson and Milner. He also met with Arthur Conan Doyle, who was at that time a medical officer in a field hospital, and who, of course, was a fellow Mason. To assist the soldiers' family fund, he wrote a poem which was put to music by another member of the craft, Sir Arthur Sullivan. Published by the Daily Mail, it helped raise over £250,000. Returning to England, Kipling purchased a new home at Burwash in East Sussex. He called it Bateman's, and here he found happiness and the peace which enabled him to write the last great story of India. The novel is Kim, and is acknowledged to be one of his finest stories. It has often been quoted in Masonic lodges, the message which it gives not only of the boy Kim and his devotion to the Lama he befriends, but also because of the Masonic overtones which run through the whole story. Honours and decorations were now offered to him, all of which he refused, only accepting the great honour of being awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1908. He refused on two occasions the Order of Merit, but did accept the honorary degrees offered by various of the universities. He also declined the opportunity of being the Poet Laureate. In the meantime, he continued to write and publish many stories and poems. The year 1914 saw the outbreak of war in Europe. Kipling's son John was to become an officer in the Irish Guards. The Great Battle of Loos took place in October 1915, and in this struggle, 20,000 lives were lost, including that of John Kipling. His father made many visits to the front line, and also paid visits to the Harwich Flotilla and the Dover Patrol, for once again he had taken up the pen of a journalist. In 1917, he started to write the definitive history of the Irish Guards, in which regiment his son served and died. Later, in the September of the same year, he was invited to join the Commonwealth War Graves Commission, and is said to have inspired the famous words, "Their name liveth forevermore." He renewed his interest in Freemasonry by being elected as a member of the correspondent circle of the Crater Coronati Lodge in May 1918, continuing until his death 18 years later. He was also invited to be present at the consecration of the Motherland Lodge, No. 3861, which still meets at Great Queen Street. However, he sent his apologies and did not attend. Virtually the same thing had occurred in 1910, at the start of the Author's Lodge, No. 3456. He was invited to the consecration, but apologized and did not attend. However, his name is shown as an honorary member in the Transactions of that lodge, published later. In 1922, members of the Commonwealth War Graves Commission formed a lodge in France at St. Omer. It was named the builders of the Silent Cities Lodge, number 12, of the Grand Loge Nationale Française. Kipling identified himself with this lodge, and he remained a member until his death. When the commission removed to London, and again a new lodge was founded, as the Builders of the Silent Cities, number 4948, Kipling was numbered amongst the founder members. He remained a member until 1935, at which time he was ill and remained at Bateman's. His course by now was almost run. His health continued to deteriorate. He visited a German spa at Marienbad with Carey in 1935, and on his return he started and finished an autobiography entitled Something of Myself. He discussed the filming of some of his stories, and on the 2nd of January 1936 he declined an offer to visit the author's lodge, giving as his reason that he would be in the sunshine of the south of France. As already stated, he did not make the journey, for on the 18th of January 1936 he was summoned to the Grand Lodge above. His ashes were interred in the Poets' Corner of Westminster Abbey in the presence of a vast congregation, which included his cousin, the Prime Minister, Stanley Baldwin. On this tape, I have quoted but one of his poems, of which there are several which directly relate to Freemasonry. In the same way, there are countless references to Masonry through the diversity of stories. Brother Haricar has listed a great number of these in his paper, and I think that I would agree with him that from a Masonic point of view, the story told in the book entitled Debits and Credits, 1926, given the separate title In the Interests of the Brethren, is without doubt amongst the best. They have already made films of the Jungle Book, and of course The Man Who Would Be King. This latter story has many Masonic overtones, as well you may read. Finally, it can be remembered by those in the craft who have in their youth been members of the Wolf Cubs that the principle of the Wolf Cub Pack is based on a story by Kipling, who was, of course, a commissioner in the Boy Scouts. To end, I quote a famous verse by Kipling entitled The Appeal. If I have given you delight by aught that I have done, let me lie quiet in that night, and for the little span the dead are borne in mind, seek not to question others than the books I leave behind.